Welcome to episode 208 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
We have some links that will help you go even further down this particular rabbit hole, and you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
When you introduced this great idea that you apparently have for the show, you said... I don't know why it was important, but you said that there is a bird on the house.
Yeah, there was a woodpecker. No, that wasn't important. That was just annoying.
You have a metal roof. I can imagine how annoying. No,
he doesn't bang on the roof. He's looking for bugs, apparently.
Probably the gutters.
But right? Making noise. It's annoying. And you know, he's also drilling holes in my house. I'm not happy about that.
But he's actually going for the wood? That's terrible.
Yes, it is. I'm glad you understand that. You know, this isn't what I was planning to start with at all.
It has nothing to do with the episode.
Nothing to do with the episode whatsoever.
Well, I'm glad remind I brought me that. Not to...
In future, I just won't tell you things.
Maybe that's the better way.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Do you feel like you to you, don't you?
I feel like me to me. I feel like certain levels of me to me, usually, yes.
Okay. Why?
Why? Oh, wow. Well, it's like a first-person shooter, you know?
It's like a first-person shooter.
Perspective. My senses are my own. Perceiving the world through me, this sack of meat.
The funny thing is nobody's really come up with any better answer than you just did.
Oh, I thought I did a piss poor job.
I was wondering what we're going to do when we're talking about the brain. Mm-hmm. Something other than just list different brain regions. Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking about consciousness.
Oh.
And this is something they call the mind-body problem, sometimes the hard problem of consciousness. Why do you feel like you are there?
Isn't this more of a philosophical question?
Yeah, because science doesn't really know how to come to grips with it. There are various approaches, but whenever science doesn't know what's going on, we can always fall back to philosophy.
Well, yeah. And,
a lot of people have wondered about this. Leibniz once explained that if you take some machine that has the property of being aware and make it huge, then you could walk inside and all you'd find are various parts working on other parts. You'd never find any part that explains why it experiences things. The subjective feel of being here.
Yeah.
And consciousness is what we can call it. And the opinions vary anywhere from without consciousness, there would be no reality to it doesn't exist at all.
It's an illusion?
Yeah. Which is a...
Very Buddhist.
Very Buddhist. I don't know. If you're saying that somehow I have been fooled into feeling like I feel things, well, then I still feel like I feel things and therefore feel. I'm still here.
Yeah, even if it's a trick.
Yeah, there's still someone there to be fooled. It's still a perception. And there is no mechanistic explanation.
There's a film called Waking Life, which is kind of interesting. But one of the thoughts they had expressed in the course of that film was, you believe you are you because you can draw a story from your youth up to this moment. But it is kind of a story because, like, the picture of you when you're 5 years old, most of what made up that five-year-old is not there anymore, physically. But because you can draw a line from that five-year-old and you remember things as that individual.
Well, on the other hand, suppose you're in the middle of a dream.
Uh-huh.
And it's not uncommon while you are dreaming to be unable to recall much of your actual life.
That makes sense, yeah.
But it's still happening to you. You are still there.
You know, I actually had a recent dream where I got sidestepped as the main character of the story. However, I was watching it like a film from that point on, and I was watching it. So yeah. I'm still there.
That still subjective feel of being present.
I'm not sure what it says about me that I handed the reins over in my dream. But...
Oh, I'm bored. Here, surprise me. Which brings up an interesting question. I mean, who is making up your dream for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We've both kind of talked about we can feel the editor,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because I don't remember being that guy doesn't mean that guy wasn't there. it gets really complicated. This guy named David Chalmers, he separated problems of consciousness into the easy problems and the hard problems.
Oh, okay.
And he was borrowing heavily from previous thinkers when he did this and freely admits it.
Mm-hmm.
For the easy problem is to figure out the mechanics of it. You know.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Here we got these voltages moving around, synaptic weights change, and you can find all the pieces, the abilities we have, like categorizing things, even referring to internal states and so forth. All of that is happening. But the hard problem is figuring out why that should actually mean that you are there.
I mean, I'm here. I can pinch myself and it hurts. That's a dream test.
Dream test. And there's been some interpretations of quantum mechanics to say that the consciousness is essential to reality. That the waveform doesn't collapse unless a mind, a human, maybe an animal mind, observes it and makes it collapse.
Yeah, quantum mechanics is weird.
And I'm not sure I buy that, because you can experience things and it has nothing to do with the rest of the world whatsoever. Once upon a time, I was on the balcony shortly after a recent eye surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And my eye, the only eye that still worked at all, was taped shut to heal.
Right.
But for some reason, it seemed like I could still see.
Oh.
I don't know if it was pain medication, possibly something else I was smoking.
I was about to ask. Anyways.
But it was very vivid. And there, I could see the balcony. I could see the cigarette I was lighting. I could look down at the parking lot and see the cars.
Mm-hmm.
What I never bothered to do was go down to the parking lot and see if I was right about the cars being there.
Right.
That sort of behavior can make neighbors nervous. But no matter how vivid that was, I figure it's just a combination of unconscious clues and memory mixed together with like some sort of lowered inhibitions for imagination seeming real or not. But there's a condition called Anton Babinski syndrome.
Okay, then.
Okay, these patients have had the primary visual cortex, nicknamed V1, injured.
V1? Like, the Matrix, the one?
No, it's just a brain area.
Okay.
They just call it V1, short for visual one.
Ah, V, okay.
In the occipital lobe, in case you care.
Sounds good. Yeah. It's gotta be somewhere.
In a few rare cases, even though they could not see anymore, they claimed they could. The patients swore up and down they were still able to see.
And did it test out?
No, they could not see.
It strikes me that vision is such a complicated process, and a lot of it involves fooling your brain.
Well, this comes into a whole general category of certain kinds of brain injury where the patient experiences denial of illness.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but your brain also makes all these assumptions about the world and the way it should be. Like, the reason the sun looks bigger on the horizon is an optical illusion. It's called something, but...
It's called something.
You're supposed to have things on the horizon appear farther from you than when they're overhead. And for some reason, when your brain corrects for the sun actually being the same size in two different locations, it makes it appear bigger. If you apparently if you turn upside down and put your head through your legs, you can see the sun.
Everything you're saying, I've heard about for the moon.
Really?
That happens for the sun?
It happens for both.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, including the upside down thing. There's one I wish I'd tried before I lost the rest of my sight. Nobody had told me that trick.
And seasickness is your inner ear, your inner ear and your eyes going out of whack. Like what you're visually perceiving versus what your inner ear is feeling aren't agreeing with each other, and it makes you sick. One of the best ways to get rid of seasickness is to look as far out into the horizon at something like an island. Something that's stable.
Something far away.
Mm-hmm.
We have the opposite of this, also caused by injuries to the visual cortex, mm-hmm. Called blindsight.
Mm-hmm.
And in this condition, the person has no conscious awareness of sight.
But
they can still occasionally move around obstacles or correctly reach out and grasp things.
Weird.
Yes, they are processing visual information and getting appropriate motor responses while entirely unaware of the fact they can see it all.
That would be disturbing.
Yes. It makes you wonder why there is a consciousness. We're apparently able to do proper movements without awareness.
But even if you lose your vision, mm-hmm. as a good example, you still perceive yourself as yourself, even though you can't like look in a mirror and go, aha, looking particularly shabby today. Whatever you think when you look in a mirror. But so it's not just one sense. In fact, sensory deprivation experiments, right?
Oh, yeah.
The goal is to not have any of your senses ticking as much as possible. And you're still there.
You're still there. Although, you will go unstable if it goes on forever. It seems like our mind needs a certain amount of ordered inputs, or it will become unstable. Start making it up instead.
This is all kind of squishy, though.
Yeah, it's all kind of squishy. One of the things they do when they're researching this question is they look for as many of the easy answers as they can find. Mind you, easy is just in relation to the hard problem. Doesn't mean that. Yeah, but they're looking for things like why do we see, when do we consciously versus unconsciously react to things, and what is the brain doing when we seem like we're consciousness? What is the neural correlate of consciousness?
There's got to be a study. Tell me they have, like, MRIs of people when they look in the mirror and recognize themselves.
They may have that. I don't know.
Well, I hope they do. That's apparently not in the links.
So I ran across this paper, and they were suggesting that the neural correlate for consciousness was actually a whole brain phenomenon. Specifically looking for certain complex patterns where lots of different areas would end up correlated for a while versus other patterns where the electrical activity or the activity of the brain was just sort of following the major connections between areas.
Eh? Okay, so they were doing fancy stuff.
Yes. I mean, they were suggesting that large, complex, changing patterns were the correlate to consciousness, that consciousness was the integration of information throughout the brain.
Okay. Well, yeah.
And that somehow the subjective feel of being there arises from an attempt to take all these different senses and everything you know that has been happening and is likely to happen and turn it into a coherent world that more or less matches what's happening more or less most of the time.
That kind of makes sense to me because they say you don't really form memories until you're like 2 or 3 years old or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the actual age, but that would make sense because babies, you watch them, and they all look like little engineers.
Oh, yes.
They're busy learning the rules of the universe. You know, water is wet, fire is hot, that sort of stuff.
Things fall down if I let go of them.
My hand can open and close.
If I knock this thing off of my high chair one more time, Dad will get red in the face and still hand it back to me.
Yeah.
That brings up a question, though, about the integration and experience of time. If consciousness is correlated with our sense of time, you might expect that the machinery of consciousness could alter the flow of time, or the apparent flow of time.
Well, I mean, subjective experience, sort of, kind of.
Yeah, time. I was looking at this, and it seems like there's a general correlation. There's a lot of things that can affect how long you think something is taking.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a general correlation that the busier your brain is, the longer that time seemed to take.
Like the 5-minute nap between snoozes.
Oh, yeah, that's the other extreme, when you actually fall asleep. Mm-hmm. When you lose consciousness, there's no duration at all.
Right?
They've actually seen this at tests with drivers and microsleeps. You can fall asleep, and if you get woken up within 5 minutes or so, you may not be aware that you fell asleep at all.
Ooh.
And on the other extreme, you're doing something where you're really, really busy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very complicated, and you've got to do a lot of things. Playing baseball and catching that ball and being able to throw it to the right place really quickly. That's going to seem to take longer. Brain's doing a lot more.
Oh, I got you.
Huh. Do have some evidence that we definitely edit the flow of events to be a single timeline.
Mm-hmm.
With a couple of hallucinations that you can look into. One is the stop clock hallucination.
Okay.
Where if your eyes dart over to look at a clock in the right way, the second hand can seem to pause on a number.
Oof, weird.
Yeah, but it's, not really doing that. And another one to get the integration of time. I like this one. It's my favorite. The neat.
The neat. Yes, there it is. This was an actual term. The neat. Okay.
Where,
tell me about the neat.
You put the subject down, you give them a button to push.
Mm-hmm.
And distance away is a light that will turn on with a roughly 100 millisecond delay.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
They may or may not notice that there's a delay at first. Mm-hmm. If they do, over time, the delay seems subjectively less. Until they feel more or less like, when they hit this button, that light comes on instantaneously.
Okay.
Now, here's the clever bit. Without telling the subject, you set it up so that it does, in fact, turn on instantly.
Oh.
And for many subjects, at least at first, for a while, it feels like the light comes on before they hit the button.
Weird.
Yes. Now, you're a brain, and you've got all these different senses and the different amounts of time it takes to get wherever it goes to where you actually feel it.
Okay, yeah.
You may have to do some editing to make it all make sense.
Yeah.
But just for fun, let's do a thought experiment and go back to that whole consciousness makes reality thing.
Okay.
Suppose, instead of it being an illusion, it is actually true for you.
So here's
the experiment I want to do.
I'm a little nervous.
All right. I'm going to set you up with that button until you feel like that 100 millisecond delay is instantaneous.
Okay.
And then we're going to set it so that it is instantaneous, but you will push the button whenever you want. But if you see the light, don't push the button.
Weird. What? Then what is that going to prove?
Nothing, really.
Just going to make you go nuts.
Yeah, like if it was really somehow the flow of time being influenced by consciousness, that'd be a paradox. Yeah, don't think it happens that way. It'd be interesting to see if anyone reports seeing the light without pushing the button.
I'm sure that's interesting. Somehow. You just want to put me in a box with a button.
Well, not you necessarily. All right. I wish I had more concrete answers. But I don't know why we feel like we are here.
Well, it's a hard question. Again, yay.
That's a hard problem of consciousness. But yeah, that's a... I need a way to end this episode now, Phil.
Well, no.
Okay, I was just postulating for a moment that maybe these changes in time are actually physically true. Changes in time. They're not.
This is an interesting thought experiment or whatnot, but it almost doesn't matter because, I don't know, you deal with...
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because that's where we're going.
Okay.
We are not going to attempt to somehow explain consciousness. We'll go with the mechanics and we'll pick that up next time. See you then.
Bye.
Oh, thank God you found an ending.